exam on the same day, but here I am. And I'll do my best.
Maybe we should just ask you questions.
So anyway, the idea is, of course, the following, that the LHC is coming, and there may be a Higgs boson sector, but it may not be the normal Higgs boson sector that we know from the standard model. In fact, there are many possibilities for the Higgs sector, and each new approach can give a significantly different channel to focus on for Higgs discovery. Of course, one should probably give some weight to things like solving the hierarchy problem and to not having too large fine-tuning of the parameters of the model in order to select out favorite models such as the minimal supersymmetric model or the next to minimal supersymmetric model that I'll have a lot more to say about. And this talk will only focus on Higgs bosons. There's also pseudo-Goldstone bosons of little Higgs models and so forth and so on. I'm not going to even talk about those. But I will talk about the CP-odd. A lot of what I'll say has to do with CP-odd spin zero states, that is the so-called A particles as opposed to the H particles, which are the CP-even states. Of course, in general, you could have CP violation, and then these two particle types of Higgs gets mixed up. Anyway, this is an early picture of the CMS. It now looks quite different, but I always thought this was a very impressive thing to look at. And is there a man somewhere down here? Well, probably some little guy that I can't even see. And of course, one of the main goals of this massive thing is to detect the Higgs bosons, but as I have already said, the signals might be quite unexpected. Now, if you have a standard model Higgs boson, then you'll certainly say after 30 inverse femtobarns, this is the cumulative, this black line up here is the cumulative statistical significance coming from a variety of channels such as Higgs into photon, photon, and TT bar Higgs with Higgs into BB bar, and WW fusion into Higgs into tau plus tau minus, the Higgs decaying to tau plus tau minus. All those channels come together to give you good statistical significance after sort of 3 years of nominal low luminosity LHC operation. This is what you see here is the CMS graph, and this is the the significance after 30 inverse femtobarns. Atlas has a similar plot. CMS, another way of saying it, is how much luminosity does it take to get a 5 sigma Higgs discovery if it's a standard model like Guy, and you'll see that most of this whole plot is no more than 10 inverse femtobarns, in fact, of luminosity in order to get, so that's 1 year running at nominal operating parameters. And certainly after 10 inverse femtobarns, we're going to have 3 sigma exclusion, for sure. So even if, things go wrong and jets aren't well measured or something like that. So standard model Higgs, sort of a done deal, and that's of course the way the LHC was designed, but there are many motivations for going beyond the standard model, and we'll discuss some of them here. First of all, there's precision electroweak, which really likes a light Higgs boson with mass near 100 GeV, maybe even a bit lower if you believe the central value of the famous blue band plot. But nonetheless, it has to escape left limits, which for a standard model Higgs boson are at 114 GeV. Now, that's not a huge difference, so nobody's particularly worried if the Higgs boson turns out to be 120 GeV in the standard model. That will still be pretty well on the precision electroweak, and there's probably some additional little things that could fix it up. The real problem, of course, with the standard model Higgs boson is this issue of naturalness. So there's a large quadratic divergence in particular that arises from a virtual top quark loop that gives a radiative correction. So this is a purely quantum effect that is negative, in fact, and is proportional to the square of some cutoff scale. So lambda t is just some high-energy cutoff scale where some new physics should enter. Now, if no new physics enters until the Planck scale, then, of course, this should be the Planck scale squared, and that means that the Higgs boson mass squared should be probably negative. It would be hard to counter something as big as the Planck mass scale squared here. Well, of course, there are also some W loops and things like that that help to offset it, but still, you know, to get the 100 GeV Higgs mass squared in the face of Planck's mass squared scale over here is very unlikely. You know, it's what we call fine-tuning. You would have to tune your bare mass. You know, there's some bare mass, m0 squared, you might call it, or mu squared in some other notation, that when summed together with this guy, they have to cancel to some extreme degree, right? And that's very unlikely if this guy over here is Planck mass squared. You know, why should they have this one part in 10 to the 30 some cancellation? So that's the hierarchy fine-tuning issue, and there's a sort of a formal definition that we use. We say we define the fine-tuning associated with such a cutoff as the absolute value of the derivative of this delta MSH squared, which is also the derivative of the M Higgs mass squared itself, divided by MH squared, the derivative with respect to this cutoff scale squared, with a lambda t squared upstairs. So this is sort of a log-log derivative, right? And if you just compute it, it's 3 over 4 pi squared times this lambda t squared over m Higgs squared. And so obviously if lambda t is a Planck mass squared, this is a huge fine-tuning, not at all desirable from in most people's point of view. One would like to have a natural explanation, so to speak, as to why the Higgs boson is light. So if you turn it around and you say you want to know what lambda t gives you a reasonable amount of fine-tuning, well, lambda t has to be less than just taking that formula to get this result. So it's sort of 400 GeV times the Higgs mass over 115 GeV times whatever you think Ft should be, square root. So if Ft is 10, that's sort of getting to the borderline of what we like. So if you plug that in up here, you get sort of a TeV out of this formula here as the most natural point at which you would expect some kind of new physics to enter in order to cure this fine-tuning problem.
But 10 is purely arbitrary.
It's sort of arbitrary, but it's what people have adopted as a reasonable criterion.
Didn't Fermi say anything with a probability less than 10% is a miracle?
That could be true. I'm sure there's a Yogi Berra quote, too. I don't know what it is. So anyway, what are your alternatives if you want to have a cutoff of this sort of 1 TeV scale? Well, you have to do something. Something has to happen. You can introduce new physics, and of course the models are things like supersymmetry, little Higgs that have that arise at a scale of order of TeV or below. Or there is one other alternative that I paid a lot of attention to at one point, and that people have sort of come back to, and that's to alter the Higgs sector so as to increase the lambda t that. Some analog of this formula, a more complicated analog of this formula, would allow. So in this case, you would look for supersymmetry or the little Higgs partners of the various gauge bosons and top and so forth. In this scenario, instead of looking for supersymmetry, you might at first at the LHC look for extra Higgs phenomena in the sort of TeV and below scale. Maybe you could raise the cutoff to 5 or 10 TeV quite comfortably, and all you would see is below that is extra Higgs stuff. And so you're going to see a model of that type. In fact, I'll begin with models of that type. But in fact, there's a sort of a tendency for extra Higgs and supersymmetry to go together, as in the model that I'll eventually come to, which is the next to minimal supersymmetric model. So what might you do to the Higgs sector purely? Well, you might add additional singlets. You know, if you listen to talks in the last quarter, you would have seen some super string models that had all these extra U1s and represent, you know, particles could belong, have transformations under all these extra U1s and have no transformations under the standard model group. So that's what I mean by singlet. You're a singlet under the standard model group. So very early on, Espinosa and I wrote down a model with many singlets. That's what string models, in fact, like. So why not? You know, and this has been recently rediscovered. It's one of the ironies of this field. You know, you write a paper, and 7 years later, nobody remembers it. And I had to tell these guys to go look at the paper. They were sort of embarrassed. Anyway, the idea is the following, that we imagine some singlets, and of course they could, you can write down terms in the Lagrangian so that the singlets mix with the regular standard model Higgs boson. Forget supersymmetry, forget doublet, extra doublets for now, just the standard model Higgs boson. And you can do it in such a way that the resulting eigenstates all share the WW, ZZ, and FF bar couplings according to some overlap fraction. So the eigenstate I would have a fraction of the standard model Higgs plus, you know, a bunch of singlet guys over here that don't connect to anything that you're going to see. And of course, you know, there's a sum rule that the sum of the fraction squared has to be equal to 1 just by canonical normalization. So in terms of precision electroweak, one crudely ends up with a situation that looks like this. That the T parameter, I hope you know what about, you know, about T and S parameters of precision electroweak. The left data has strong constraints on these T and S parameters. So in terms of this mixed scenario, the T parameter would be Fi squared times summed over I times the contribution to T from each eigenstate as it would be in the standard model, but just suppressed by this fraction, and S would have a similar result. And these these TSM and SSM are basically logarithmic functions, so that if you want to get out the observed 100 GeV scale, the logarithmic function means that the electroweak scale, let's say call it 100 GeVs, should be the product of the MI raised to the FI squared power. So let's imagine that all the Fi squareds are equal and the Mi are not too widely separated, then, and they're, so, you know, you might have one Higgs at 80, another at 90, another at 100, another at 110, another at 120. That's great for precision electroweak. That'd be perfect. But what would happen to your signal? Well, we'll come back to that. First of all, what would happen to fine tuning? Well, now, each HI has a top quark loop, focusing on that, which is suppressed by this factor of Fi squared. Okay, so that you would get, instead of the usual formula, you get a fine tuning that's suppressed by Fi squared. So if Fi squared is 1/5, well, obviously that allows you to raise this lambda T cutoff up to, you know, the number of TeV. And so your fine tuning issue is delayed until some higher scale. You don't get worried until a scale of 3 TeV or some such number. At that point, you would claim other new physics would have to enter, but the Higgs sector has temporarily done the job for you so that you moved it out of the LHC, the new physics, out of the LHC reach. New physics other than the Higgs bosons. You've now got 5 Higgs bosons sitting at the electroweak scale, but each one of them has suppressed couplings. You know, remember this Fi says, you know, how suppressed is that coupling to the standard model particles. So, multiple mixed Higgs allow a much larger lambda T for a given, you know, acceptable FT per Higgs. Large lambda T also implies significant corrections to the low E phenomenology from lambda T scale physics is much less likely. So again, let's come back to this example. One doublet plus four complex singlets, that gives you five mixed states. Also, you get four CP odd states at the same time, which might play a role. And so anyway, if you put the numbers in, lambda T of 5 TeV would be where you would start to worry about other types of new physics. But meanwhile, the signal for each HI is much harder. You can spread out the MI, as I said, every 10 GeV. And so all your usual signals, 4L, gamma, gamma, and so forth and so on, they're all at least, they're very substantially reduced, at least of order one-fifth of the normal signal.
These singlets, they also have self-coupling and potentials, etc.?
Yes, that's the only way it gets mixed. So they have their own self-couplings, but also they have to have a coupling to the standard model Higgs. So you have to have things like, M squared, let's call the singlet S. You have to have M squared, S squared, and you have to have things like H dagger, H, S squared, for example, or SS star, really. So, just the standard Lagrangian.
The electromix scale is a product of all those masses.
Yeah.
So then, if you look at the stability of the electromix scale, shouldn't you sum up those fine tunings individually? In which case, you would get exactly the same result as if you had just one Higgs.
I guess I don't understand that.
Well,
right.
If you look at the previous.
Yeah. Whoops.
So the electromix scale is a product of all those MI to power FI squared. So if you look
but
at
if
the
I, but
you
see, if I introduce just if I introduce just one top, so all the FIs are the same, right?
Yeah.
So if I just introduce one upper cutoff, then each Higgs boson mass squared is not fine too.
Yes. But
until lambda T gets much bigger.
But the electronic scale is a product of all of them.
No, but I'm not talking about the electroweak scale here, you mean? That's the S and T electroweak scale. Here I'm talking about the fine tuning of the Higgs mass squared. You're absolutely right that if each FI squared is one fifth, then in fact it's just very natural to get M electroweak to be of order 100 GeV if these guys are just sitting in the vicinity of 100 GeV. But each Higgs mass squared is just perfectly natural in the vicinity of 100 GeV if lambda T is of order 5 TeV in this example.
But suppose you get true 10% fine tuning, does that the equivalent to a 1% fine tuning?
Yeah, you are just replacing 1% fine tuning by two 10% fine tunings which you multiply.
Well, I guess I don't agree with that point of view.
But that's the equation 5, isn't it?
I mean, if I change lambda T, each Higgs mass changes by by some small percentage.
Yeah, but you have to tune 10 different things at the same time.
Well, you're now questioning the model, though. I'm starting with a model where the Lagrangian mixes these Higgs together. Okay, so you're saying okay, maybe the model is fine too, and that's. You can question the model, I agree. But if you have a model where these Higgs bosons are already mixed, then their masses of each one of the eigenstates is quite stable. So anyway, all these all the channels you have are, well, first of all, you have to worry about resolution since these Higgs are only spread out by 10 GeV. Any channel that has a hadronic-style resolution, you're just going to get kind of a continuum of signals, not a mass peak. The 4-lepton and gamma-gamma signals are, of course, much narrower, but their rates are, let's say, one-fifth of the standard model value, roughly speaking. So that's certainly a concern, but there's even bigger concern, as we'll see, that the Higgs bosons can decay. Well, for example, the CP even can decay to two CP odd guys, and we could also have CP even to two CP even guys. And if these Higgs boson decays, Higgs into Higgs decays are present, then and one is in big trouble, as we're about to see. Now, if you don't have the Higgs-to-Higgs decays, then you can look at the WW final state, and so long as there's weight of the Higgs bosons in sort of this region here of 120 to 170 GeV, you still get a nice signal. The standard model would give you this guy, the red would give you this guy. I don't have time to go into detail, but it's not a big difference. But that's without any Higgs-to-Higgs decays. One would, after 100 inverse femtobarns, get a 5 sigma signal. But that relies on having, you know, Higgs bosons near 150 rather than down lower, for example. And as I say, it ignores these kinds of decays. So, you know, we were worried about these kinds of Higgs-to-Higgs decays, you know, way back at Snowmass 96, where we were looking at the NMSSM. And since then, you know, that's been pursued by the Rescue and Company, and then I and a bunch of collaborators have been looking at this in the NMSSM context and generalizing a bit. So why is it these H-to-AA decays are so dangerous? Well, let's look at the width. So here's the Higgs to Higgs Higgs width, and it has some coupling squared and then sort of a standard form and some phase space suppression factor. And this also applies for AA final states, you know, just a different coupling squared up here. So let's for a moment just parameterize this coupling up here in terms of a constant times the kind of a standard weight coupling. So if you set that C equal to 1, then the width for a Higgs into 2 Higgs is 0.17 GeV times this thing cubed. The standard Higgs into BB bar, you know, without any of those FIs or anything else right now, is 0.003 GeV times Higgs mass over 100 GeV. And you'll obviously notice a big factor here that if I put a C squared in front here, you know, it's going to take a pretty small value of C before this one fails to win over this BB bar width. I mean, the point is that the BB bar is not very strongly coupled to Higgs. I mean, of course, once you pass the WW threshold, then this kind of decay comes in, which has, you know, if you look at it, it's essentially the same as the Higgs-Higgs formula over here for C equal 1. So if C is equal to 1 and you're above ZZ WW threshold, then the Higgs to Higgs decays give you only a fraction of the total width. But if you're below that threshold, you're in big danger from these kinds of couplings. So in fact, a C of 0.13 would make the HH or AA mode equal to the BB bar mode. And there are lots of models that can give you that kind of C, is the point. So, if you scale C and all other couplings down to by a fraction FI, then the BB bar also suffers, so that doesn't help. That you just simply scale ratios, and so you're still left with big danger from the Higgs to Higgs decays if the WW and ZZ channels are not open. So anyway, the bottom line so far is there's no guarantee for observing a Higgs at the LHC, and simultaneously no guarantee of new physics until the many TeV scale if you allow for these expanded Higgs sectors.
Why do your talks always scare me, Jack?
Because they're designed to.
But what about the subsequent Higgs? I mean, this is one Higgs goes to two Higgs, but then those Higgs have to decay too, right?
Well, of course. So that's what I'm about to say next, is you have to develop some sensitivity to those extra decays. So you want to find a way of looking for Higgs into AA. It's not your standard way to step, okay? And we'll, of course, come back to that. So, recently people have, sort of come back to this whole story in more simple cases. So, Jim Wells and Hugh Deechy, some famous guys, right, have rediscovered this in just with one singlet. So, for example, you can write down, with one singlet, you can write down the form H-dagger HS or H-dagger HS squared. This first form automatically leads to mixing between the standard model Higgs and the singlet, This second form does not automatically do so unless S acquires a VEV, but if you have an M squared S squared and M squared is negative, then S will break symmetry and you acquire a VEV, and that's perfectly, if you're going to do it for the standard model Higgs, why not do it for the singlet Higgs to have a negative M squared? So no good reason not to suppose that either one of these terms could be responsible for the mixing. Jim Wells likes to impose this symmetry to get rid of the trilinear term and carry on from there. But still, you've got mixing. if you don't have any ms squared, s squared, or s to the fourth terms, which seems unlikely to me, but you could imagine them, that some model, people like to explore that model, then life simplifies a little bit. But anyway, even with very small mixing, s would decay in a canonical fashion, you know, the branching ratio for the singlet to BB bar and the singlet to tau plus tau minus would be, you know, the standard ratio, and one would then search for channels like this, H into SS into 4B into 2B tau, 2 tau into 4 tau. Well, this assumes that the mass of this singlet is above 2MB, it might be below 2MB, and then you'd be left with the 4 tau or maybe 4 jet channel if it was really light. Really liked. So you might, first of all, say, well, aren't there some luck constraints on this scenario? I mean, you know, if you suppose you had a lot of 4B, then you would have Z Higgs and the Z plus 2B from the direct BB decay, but then Z plus 4B from this SS to 4B decay. Now, notice that I'm saying that there has to be some mixing. If there's no mixing, this singlet would, in fact, be invisible, would interact with anything. So you would then have Higgs into SS into invisible. And, well, that's an okay signal at LEP. It may not be such a good signal at LHC, although, you know, you can certainly see such a channel. You need lots of luminosity to see an invisible Higgs decay at LHC. But at LEP, you know, a purely invisible mode, you know, that has the same limit of 114 GeV as does the standard model Higgs.
So the mixing makes sure that S coupling to fermions is same as H coupling to fermions. They're all mass couplings, so it's still B and tau.
Well, the coupling is not the same, but the proportionality, so the ratio, the BB bar to the tau-tau coupling would be as in the standard model, even though both were suppressed.
Then what? If it's not the same mechanism, then why is it? Why does it favor the heavier guys? Why is it mass?
Because it's mixing to the standard model Higgs, and it's the standard model Higgs couplings that the singlet is feeling.
Okay, so it is derived from standard model.
Yeah, so it comes from the standard model. It just has a suppression factor, the mixing factor in front of it.
Okay.
So anyway, if you have this SS to 4B, then in fact the left limits are significant. That would require a Higgs mass above 110 GeV, it turns out, that would be imposed in this scenario. If you're going to 4 tau, you know, unless you can do something about this 4 tau mode, then the mass limit is 87 GeV. So you see, if you don't have the BB decay from this channel, then your LEP limit goes way down to 87 GeV in the 4 tau mode, or if it's in the 4 jet mode, it goes down to 82 GeV. So, as I said, you know, there are a number of possible channels. If the S is decaying to B's, then you could worry about, say, WW fusion to Higgs to SS to BB bar tau tau, and you can try to work on that mode and see if you can dig out a signal in that case at the LHC. No hope, I think. Well, maybe John will correct me eventually at the Tevatron, but at the LHC it's certainly not easy. We wrote a paper pointing out that there was some hope. You could sort of dig out a signal after 300 inverse femtobarns. It was a signal that could have come from anything almost. But it could come from a Higgs, but to really know that it was a Higgs wouldn't be exactly easy. You would have this bump in the BB bar tau tau mass spectrum, but to actually say it was a Higgs would be a challenge. You would need to go through the ILC to do that. You know, there's some more papers that have been looking at that and say, well, you can use some other modes to help this mode out. But it's all a challenge, okay? Chang, Fox, and Weiner have another singlet model that they like. They have only this S squared H squared term, and so there's no mixing of the singlet. And so they would say, well, how will the S decay? It's not going to decay through its couplings, through its mixing with the standard model Higgs. And so it could be stable. They say, okay, I don't like a stable S. I'm going to do something else. I'm going to introduce a vector quark represented by the size here. And then there's going to be a loop diagram where the Higgs couples through a loop of this psi and psi bar into two photons or two gluons. So then this S would decay to two photons, some combination. You know, the photon-photon mode would be 1/10, and the gluon-gluon mode would be 0.9, and so, you know, LEP limits are weak, but, you know, that could be what you should be searching for at the LHC and the Tevatron. You should be looking for, you know, 4-gamma, gamma-gamma, BB, and 4B final states for the Higgs, assuming the S is that heavy. If the S is lighter, then it's back to, you know, in this model, it's always, you know, two photons or two gluons. There's no fermion thing. So that's a very different search mode for you guys at the LHC or the Tevatron. And as far as you might say, well, maybe there's some good limits from LEP on, say, the 4-photon final state. Well, you know, when for other reasons that Dermasek and I were involved in, we also were looking at 4-photon final states. So at that point, I sent out 5 emails to all the best-known LEP experimentalists asking, what are the limits on this channel? And nothing came back. Lots of answers saying, well, you know, maybe if we did this, you know, we could constrain it. Maybe if we did that, we could constrain it. But I never got a definitive, you know, nobody ever sent me a table of limits or a plot, so I have no idea whether LEP has any limits on this channel or not. So anyway, the kinds of branching ratios you're talking about is, you know, 4 gamma to is 1.4 times 10 to the minus 5. The 2G, 2 gamma is, you know, 10 to the minus 2. And, of course, the 4G is the dominant mode, of course, the most difficult, right? That's the one that would be buried in hadronic mush at a typical hadron collider. Now, the one hope is that maybe there would be a significant lifetime for this S, you know, because these couplings are actually quite small, you know, they're loop generated. So C tau is sort of like 1 centimeter. You see the scaling factors here. You know, M is the mass of the heavy vector quarks. So, you know, the heavier they get, the longer the lifetime. And so, you know, maybe by looking for vertices and this 2G, 2 gamma mode, you know, you could dig this signal out. But it's quite a different signal. You have to think about doing it and triggering on it. And, you know, these photons and gluons are not too hard because there are 4 of them. And, you know, can you trigger on this? I don't know. You know, what is your minimum photon energy trigger to be able to collect data? Now, Jim Wells and another guy, you know, they have a similar model, except they have, you know, terms that mix. You know, they've imposed this S to minus S. Well, they've called the S phi here. and so they have to have a VEV in order to get mixing, but they introduce a, you know, more general Lagrangian. They get a VEV, and they, you know, have mixing. And once again, you know, they have lots of problems with these decays. And I don't have time to go into the details. You can look at this talk. It's on my webpage if you want. Matt Strassler has yet another model. He focuses on a CP odd state with H into AA being an important decay. And he again emphasizes the fact that A decay vertices could be displaced. He also has something that are called hidden valley models, which I don't have time to go into. Just trying to alert you to this, in which the Higgs decays to virtually to a couple of normal gauge bosons, which then connect by diagrams to hidden sector gauge bosons, which then decay each to 4B. So again, we're back to this 4B final state. And So there are lots of models that you could write down.
If you have these vectors coming in again, strongly bound, this is like Technicolor again.
Well, I don't know.
They're not. Okay, I mean, it's a mixture of.
Yeah, these are not electroweak vector bosons. They're just some hidden, hidden valley physics is not connected to our physics, except through some small mixing that causes this decay. Okay. And of course, these Vs could, in principle, cascade down to some lighter Vs, and you could get a real mess in a general model. Okay. Now, there's not much motivation for these models, in my opinion. I mean, it's just an illustration of what you might want to sort of keep in the back of your mind as a possible alternative to the usual search channels. Now, of course, you can add doublets as well as singlets. String models, again, love to have extra doublets. If you heard Keith's talk yesterday, you saw all kinds of doublets as well as singlets in his list of possible fractures, as he called it, of the master gauge group. They preserve the fact that the W to Z mass should be, which is called rho tree. This rho tree is the ratio of the W squared mass squared to Z squared times cosine squared theta W, that should be equal to 1 at tree level and only correct at the loop level. And lots of models have been done in the two doublet context. I just want to point out one very old one now that's been sort of rediscovered by people at Berkeley. I'll remember when I get to the next page. So in this model, what one can do is have a very heavy standard model like Higgs and a possibly moderately light A, and a quite heavy charged Higgs pair and heavier CP even guy. So we have two doublets. This is the full Higgs sector complement of eigenstates. And normally the standard model like Higgs gives you a very bad prediction for S and T, but if there's a small difference between the charged Higgs and the neutral Higgs mass, in fact, the radiative corrections will automatically generate a difference of the right magnitude, then you can get very large delta T. This only has to be a 1 GeV to give you enough delta T to fix everything up. So the picture is the following. Here's the ST parameter space. Here's an old version. This is quite old. This is shifted around a little bit now. But here's the center of the ellipse for 115 GeV canonical standard model Higgs boson. And if you go to this model and take the Higgs mass, well, let's take this one, up to 800 GeV, if it were a standard model Higgs, that would put you down at this point and be in bad disagreement with the standard model precision electroweak ellipse. But if you take delta T as given by a mass difference of order of GeV or so here, that immediately puts you up here where this blue blob is, within the 95% confidence level ellipses. So left data would say, okay, well, it's not the absolute preferred value, but we only have so much accuracy, and so it's quite consistent. Now, these smaller ellipses are things, so this outer ellipse is what you have from current data. This smaller ellipse is what you would get if you build the linear collider and you run it in the so-called giga-Z mode, where you're doing collisions at the Z mass. And you also need a threshold measurement of WW production at the new linear collider that gets you to a precision on the W mass of order 6 MeV in order to get to these smaller ellipses here. Now, this example is a pure Higgs sector example of a much more general approach that does the same thing. There are many models you can write down where the Higgs is heavy and then some new physics puts you back up there. And so you can't really say from the precision electroweak that the Higgs is 100 GeV. You could have this kind of difficulty. So if you took M Higgs of 2MW, for example, this or 800 GeV, and put that back into fine tuning, then lambda T would be okay at 1.5 TeV or 9 TeV, depending upon which choice you make. But as you see, you can make the 800 GeV choice here, and then lambda T for the same fine tuning of 10 is going to say LHC needn't see anything at all. And Higgs phenomenology would change because C is equal to 1 in this model, and the AA decay mode would be dominant if the A's were light enough. Now, this model doesn't prefer quite such a light A, so maybe this is not such a danger, but then, and in any case, this Higgs is going to be possibly quite a bit above the WW threshold, so you can see the WW and ZZ channels, but at 800 GeV, not at what you were expecting. People have rediscovered this scenario and given it a new name called twisted custodial symmetry, anyway. And Barbieri and Hall, I won't have time to go through this, have done sort of a similar thing, slight perturbation and what have you, but I claim it's basically the same deal. Now, you could also add triplets to your Higgs sector. If the triplets don't have a VEV, then in fact rho equal 1 remains your prediction of the model, and you can certainly write down a Higgs sector potential for which the triplets don't acquire, the neutral member of the triplet does not require a VEV. If it does require a VEV, then MW and MZ must be input separately as part of the renormalization program, and this gets to be a complicated subject that I don't have time to dwell on, but you can actually get a dark matter candidate out of this first context here, and people have rediscovered the same kind of thing in the context of three extra SU2 doublets, but it's equivalent to the neutral triplet possibility. So anyway, simply adding Higgs to the Higgs sector is very likely to give rise to Higgs to Higgs decays that will generally make Higgs detection far more difficult than in the standard model, and simultaneously allow you to raise this lambda T at which LHC must see some other new physics other than additional Higgs bosons. Now, there's also the standard model in extra dimensions. I'm not going to talk about this. I'm going to really stick to four dimensions here, but you should be aware that lots of things can change in four dimensions. So now let's go to supersymmetric model. That's obviously a canonical example of what we love, and this has been well explored in the CP conserving, no mixing phases in the Higgs sector, no CP violation there. And a lot of the signals for the MSSM Higgs sector rely on the fact that the lightest Higgs cannot be more massive than about 130 GeV, and when it's of order this mass, it's going to be very standard model-like. So in that model, you have the canonical standard model signals, GG to Higgs to gamma gamma, GG to, there's also GG to TT bar Higgs, which Higgs going to BB bar, various other scenarios. You also have things like BB bar plus H or BB bar plus A, and these couplings are enhanced by tangent beta at large tangent beta. And if the H and A decay to tau tau, then this is a signal that can be seen even at the Tevatron. And those of you who are familiar with John's blog on this and the CDF results, they see a possible hint of such a signal, but D0 sees a deficit where they see a hint, and so the situation is kind of uncertain. If tangent beta is moderate, then you end up with this scenario here. You end up in this so-called wedge where you don't see any of the other Higgs of the MSSM, the capital H or the capital H plus minus or the capital A. They're all very massive and they have no enhanced couplings. In this region up here, they have enhanced couplings and you can see them, but down in this wedge, you only see the light standard model-like Higgs. But the MSSM is probably should be really thought of as not a very favorite model at this point in time. First of all, there's something called the mu term in the superpotential. Now, you either know what this is or you don't, but the point is that it has a dimension of mass. And what you need phenomenologically in order for the MSSM to make sense, the Higgs sector, and other sectors, you need mu to be of order of TeV, whereas the most natural values are either M Planck, because this is, you know, what you get out of a string model in a natural way. Or there might be some symmetry that sets it equal to zero. It's sort of hard to get a TBB. In fact, there are, you know, 15 papers out there that tell you why it should be a TEV. But of course, if there are 15 answers, it probably means there's none of them are right, right? So the second thing is that you still end up with substantial fine-tuning with respect to gut scale parameters. Now, why do I say gut scale here? Well, gut scale is what is one of the main motivations for believing in the MSSM, namely that if you take the gauge couplings and you evolve them up to the gut scale at 10 to the 16th GeV, then you get gauge coupling unification. So this is such a beautiful idea. This is why people believe in the MSSM, that, you know, gauge coupling unification should be right. Okay? Well, if you're going to believe that this model applies up to the gut scale, then what matters is not the fine-tuning that I had before. You know, I've cured the hierarchy problem in supersymmetry because the spermions have canceled the top loop, and so long as the spermions are of order TEV, then, you know, that old hierarchy and naturalness problem is gone. That's what supersymmetry does for you. But there's a new problem, which is, you know, can you get the right value of MZ starting from the gut scale? And here P is any old gut scale parameter. So this is just like the fine-tuning measure we had before, but now with MZ with respect to gut scale parameters. Gut scale meaning things like mu at the gut scale, Galileo mass at the gut scale, Higgs mass squareds that appear in your Lagrangian and soft super breaking, soft supersymmetry breaking at the gut scale, the soft supersymmetry breaking AT parameter. These are usually the most critical. So, you know, as I said, you know, this H naught is, you know, pretty standard model like, so the left limit of 114 GeV applies to it. And here's what you get. The red points are the ones with Higgs mass above 114 GeV. You'll see that this fine tuning measure is of order 25, which is, I don't know, you can't totally throw out the model for a fine tuning of 25, but it's really worrisome. You know, that's a lot of fine tuning to get a sensible scenario. And this plot is for fairly low Gaugino masses, in particular the Galileo mass. So this is sort of his bet. This is, you know, sort of at the edge of CDF limit. So this is sort of the best you can do. The blue points are excluded by LEP. But of course, they're the ones that give you very low fine tuning, you know, below 10 or so. That's where you would like to be. You would like to be at a Higgs mass of 100 GeV and no fine tuning. But it's not LEP allowed in the MSSM. Now, the NMSSM, however, will change the story. It allows you to have your cake and eat it too, so to speak. Now, the NMSSM, what it is again, you add a singlet. Notice, you know, there's a common theme here. You add a singlet now to your supersymmetric model. This singlet is not needed for the usual naturalist hierarchy problem that I've already cured by, you know, the supersymmetric construction. But what it does is it allows you to do lots of nice things. So first of all, just some points about the NMSSM. Since I add only a singlet, gauge unification is not changed. RGE evolution development of electroweak symmetry breaking, that's another nice property, is preserved. The mu, here's that superpotential term, hats mean superfields. This mu term is automatically generated in the NMSM by writing down lambda times the singlet superfield times these two guys, and then if the scalar component of S acquires a VEV, then an effective value of mu of order lambda times S is produced. And this VEV S is sort of automatically of order this supersymmetry breaking scale, namely a TEV. So you automatically get a mu that's in a nice range. There's another superpotential that you put in. Meanwhile, as we'll discuss, it's very natural to have a light pseudoscalar and to have H1 decaying to the two light pseudoscalars. And so long as the pseudoscalar is less massive than 2MB, so that the tau-tau channel is the dominant A decay mode, this is perfectly allowed by LEP. And there's some preference for the A to be above 2m, 2m tau, but below 2mb, which means that you should be looking for H to AA to 4 taus. And that's a channel that Radovan and I have been stressing for some time. So here's an NMSSM picture of the fine tuning with respect to gut scale parameters that I defined earlier. And here's the story. The black points are points that arise if you just impose, you know, the electroweak minimum should be a good minimum, stuff like that. The green points are the ones that survive if you require that the stop is heavy enough and that the chargino is heavy enough. The blue points are ones that survive if you only look at Z plus 2B and Z plus 4B at LEP separately. You know, to combine those two channels is a bit tricky, so what they actually publish are the separate constraints on those two channels. The yellow points are the ones that have MA less than 2MB and are completely consistent with LEP data. And you can't actually populate both the 2B and the 4B channel at LEP without running into trouble. So you actually must have, for almost all of parameter space, that MA less than 2MB type thing. So the yellow crosses here typically have a branching ratio of Higgs to BB bar of order 0.1, and it turns out that this perfectly explains a long known excess at LEP at 98 GeV. Of course, for that, you should go back here and notice where the minimum fine tuning for these models is. It's at exactly 100 GeV. So, you know, you predict more or less the LEP excess at 100 GeV. Of course, the LEP excess has only 2.3 sigma statistical significance, and you might question whether you should bother with that or not. So we weren't able to do this. We had to send our points to Philip Beckley, who's in charge of the LHWG code, and have him check this. But anyway, this is his result. And of course, you know, don't forget that 100 GeV is perfect for the precision electric weak. So anyway, what do you do at the LHC? Well, you have to tackle, since the other normal peak signals have been reduced by 1/10, you're not going to see any of the usual signals. You've got to look for Higgs to AA to 4 tau if you're lucky, or 4J if you're unlucky in the mass of the A. So as regards the 4 tau channel, you can think of WW fusion to Higgs to 4 tau. I think actually this will ultimately be shown to work, but it hasn't been shown yet. TT bar Higgs with Higgs to 4 tau. Another interesting possibility is PP into PP Higgs. So what you do is it's a totally exclusive final state. So these are two protons and only a Higgs and nothing else in the final state. Now, to isolate that final state, you know, from all your backgrounds and so forth, first of all, you have to trigger on this, and then you have to worry about your backgrounds and how well you're going to do.
If this A exists at below 10 GeV, for some reason Z to AA is not big, I mean...
Yeah, this A is mainly singlet. So it doesn't have a standard, you know, sort of what I call, quote, standard model rate for production, because it only has, you know, a weak coupling, about 1/10 to standard model. It's only 1/10, you know, sort of SU2 normal standard model stuff, and it's 90% singlet, which doesn't couple to anything. So that's makes this
A. But the Z width was so well measured. I mean, it should have had an effect on that.
I'm sorry, what's so well measured?
On the Z width.
Z to AA minus CP.
Yeah.
Oh, it's CP. Oh.
Yeah, you have to go to HA.
Oh, okay.
And of course, my H is 100 GeV.
That's right. Okay.
I'm safe.
That's nice.
No, this model is totally safe. That's the problem with it, and it's attractive. So. Actually, Forshaw and I and a few collaborators are about to write a paper. Well, we've written the paper. We're just sort of proofing it now, that claims that this thing will work. Here I quote an event rate of 50 events for 300 inverse femtobarns and 5 events for 30 inverse femtobarns at the LHC. The actual rates after we do all the necessary cuts are a little bit below this, but this is already, you know, it's a challenging deal, okay? The signal is totally clean, but to clean it up, you really have to, you know, do some stuff. But, you know, a small handful of background-free events at the same Higgs mass, you know, this Higgs mass here can be reconstructed using the incoming and outgoing measured protons to order GeV. So all your events would be in the same mass bin. But, so you see 50 events in the 4-tau final state or whatever in this diffractive mode. Do you believe it's a Higgs? Maybe, but it's not exactly directly related to WW and ZZ couplings, so it'd be nice to have that WW fusion mode. Now, another point of sensitivity is you might look for upsilon 1s or 2s or 3s to photon plus pseudoscalar type decays, and it turns out that there's a lower bound on this branching ratio just coming from the requirement that the Higgs has to have a big branching ratio to AA. Turns out that this bounds from below this branching ratio to something like 10 to the minus 7. Now, current limits are a few times 10 to the minus 4 in this channel for MA, of course, at low enough mass that this decay has a reasonable phase space. Of course, there's a region where this decay is not useful if the MA is too heavy. We think, and Bob and I and Radovan have tried to interest the BB bar factory people in looking at this decay and pushing down to this lower limit. And we've got John Rosner interested now. Bob spent a day with him, or at least half a day last week, I think it was. And so maybe something will happen there. And be fun. Of course, you may recall there was an old zeta of 8.3 that appeared in this monochromatic photon spectrum here that eventually disappeared with increased statistics. Now, maybe it was just a lucky statistical fluctuation that will reconfirm once we, analyze these billions of BB bar factory events. Or maybe this was just simply an error, which some people say it was an analysis error. So I don't know. Anyway, it's just a speculation.
Is there any branching ratio off the 4S?
No.
Not really.
The 4S is too wide.
Yeah.
The partial width here is essentially fixed.
Yeah, so that's what makes it hard for Babar. They have to change their accelerator running a little bit to do this. But Bell should have no problem.
This can be anywhere. It can be below 2 GeV.
Well, that's right. Yeah.
So there's this famous crystal ball state that was never exotic, that was never explained.
Well, what is it?
Crystal ball, what is it, the 1.7 GeV exotic?
Is that that's in the monochromatic photon spectrum?
No, I'm saying there was a state that is still out there, the 1.7 GeV.
How did it decay?
I'll have to look it up now. Is this from the 80s, the crystal ball experiment?
Okay, well, that's even too old for me to remember.
They were running at 3 GeV.
Well, this thing was about 1.7 GeV mass, yeah.
Well, anyway, we'll have to check that out. And
what the A is.
Well,
now, of course.
We're back to the old physics factor down there.
I mean, this, in a general sense, it would be good to push these limits down as far as you possibly can because. This may be your only chance to directly produce these pseudoscalars in any way, to have this kind of sensitivity. They're singlets mainly, and if you see them in Higgs decays, that's all, fine and dandy, but you haven't directly probed their properties in the way that you might wish to, and this would be another probe. Now, of course, if you're willing to accept somewhat higher fine-tuning, if you go back to, this plot, you can go out here to these blue points, fine-tuning of 10, which these blue points start appearing at, is not exactly terrible, right? And then you would get, different Higgs mass, and the pseudoscalar would be out here, would be allowed to have a mass above 2 MB. This is that 110 GeV point that I mentioned. And so, you shouldn't ignore that either, possibility of a Higgs mass above 110 or 114 with BB decays. Then you get a whole list of channels that look like this and appropriate weights. And so there are lots of things to look at, but none of them is a terribly strong thing. Now there's another model, MSSM, with a singlet. I don't think I have time to go into this. That they give you even more exotic things. You know, they decay to an SS, but then the S's, which are now the CP even members, decay to their pseudoscalar partners in pairs, and so you get things like 8 gluons and 8 taus, and you know. Anyway, you get the idea. Arbitrary complication. There's also a U1 prime model developed by Han, Langer, and Bob that has a bunch of singlets. You know, there's an S, and then there's an S1, 2, 3. They're all charged under some U1 prime, but not under the standard model groups. S would give the mu parameter, just as in the NMSSM, but all these other guys are potentially down there and present in the decays, not only of the S, but of the Higgs. And, you know, there's some attractive features. You know, this is not so crazy given the string model context and string model building, but I don't have time to go into it, but the Higgs can decay to neutralino pairs as well as the Higgs pairs because, you know, you've got a whole bunch of neutralinos associated with all these singlets that you've added in, and the A1 could be dominated by neutralino pair decays, and these needn't be the LSP. If the A goes invisibly, then you're in business. You're back to Higgs decaying invisibly, which you have a decent signal. But it's when you get Higgs into this and Higgs into that, and some of it is visible and some of it's invisible, that you get into big trouble. And, hello? Is it coming? And here's the big trouble. These are a whole bunch of different channels, and you could be anywhere in this plot, and this is what you have to look for in order to see a Higgs boson. So I don't have time to dwell on it. This is how the A decays, and you know, again, all kinds of possibilities, a long list of possible channels. You could go bananas trying to find this guy until you build the ILC and you just produce the Higgs and you look at it in the inclusive missing mass mode. So you know, the important channels are 4 chi tildes, 2 A's, and they go. The A's go to 4 chi tildes, which decay partly visibly and partly invisibly. You've got 2 chi tildes, which again, partly visible, partly invisible. You can have the AA decay going to all the NMSSM channels that we've talked about and any mixture thereof. So there's also something called the E6 MSSM that also has this same kind of thing. And then if you really want to get into it, you could go back to MSSM with R parity violation. Now here, you can also have a Higgs of 100 GeV, and how does it escape? Well, it escapes in the following way. The H decays to, let me focus on this model here, which I think is nice and attractive. It would decay to 2 neutralinos, but now R parity, if it's conserved, this gives you an invisible decay and left excludes this channel at 100 GeV. It would allow above 114 GeV. But if you have baryonic R parity violation, then this neutralino decays to 3 jets, and therefore the Higgs is decaying to 6 jets, and this channel only has a lower bound on the Higgs mass of 82 GeV. So a Higgs mass of 100 GeV is perfectly acceptable in this case. And, you know, could be that that's what you should be looking for at the Tevatron and the LHC, and you'll never see, okay, as you can well appreciate. So in all these models, you would see a massive amount of supersymmetry, you know, everything, you know, in order to get a Higgs mass of 100 GeV, you want light stops and light linos, you would see all those guys. You wouldn't see any sign, possibly, of a Higgs boson, because it was doing some complicated thing like this. You'd have to go to the ILC to see the Higgs boson. Your only signal that the Higgs would be present is the WW scattering at high energy after 300 inverse femtobarns. You would see that it was, you know, quite perturbative in magnitude rather than strongly interacting W sector. So you would know that something had to be there to fix up the unitarity of WW scattering. Well, anyway, I have no time for all this other stuff. There, again, Michael Grasser has a new thing here where there are some extra neutrinos, and actually this has become sort of a popular game. The Higgs decays to heavy neutrinos, which then chain decay down to something else. There might be vertices, so that you could do something there. But anyway, what what I conclude from all this. The precision electric weak preference for a standard model like Higgs of 100 GeV or so, the old LEP excess at the same mass in the BB bar channel but at a reduced rate, and the fact that supersymmetric models have minimal fine-tuning for such a mass, and of course they also cure the generic naturalness and hierarchy problem. You know, these all combine, engage unification, all the other things you're supposed to remember, to suggest that the LHC may have to find the Higgs boson by looking in some mode like H into PP, where P might be a pseudoscalar or a neutralino or, you know, a heavier neutralino or whatever. And this would allow you to avoid the left bound, make searches at hadron colliders much more difficult, but it's really a very reasonable scenario. It's quite attractive. And as I say, don't forget the importance of looking for WW perturbativity at the LHC. Thank you.
Do you have the left two plot looking for, using the missing mass thing, the totally model-independent Higgs from it?
Yeah, well, I have, not in this set of transparencies, but I can certainly show it to you.
What is the about?
82.
82.
Lower bound.
Okay, lower bound.
So I have a question not so much for you, but I was thinking about this morning, And so taking the model independent search, it seems to me the thing to do in that case, after you've run all your favorite searches, you ran the MSSM, you ran the standard model, you didn't find anything. It seems to me the thing to do is to take those events in the model-independent search and look at them by hand, one by one, and say, well, okay, can a human find anything in these that looks like anything at all?
Can you volunteer?
Sure. Because there are only like 100 or so of these events.
Dick's left. He loved this model, Hamskin. So I asked him Dick's here.
So I'm
but
sure,
we
didn't do that.
You know, when
so
you're at CERN, you can go above the L3 people.
Well, no, but I mean, there's. So, my question is to the experimental community, there seems to be a very strong systematic community bias not to do that.
No.
Well, there is one, which is that basically people say there's no way to correct for the analysis. Because we'd have to correct the human.
Well, yeah, so I would be very cautious kind of a discovery in that. But instead,
once you've done your blind search and open the box,
yeah,
go wild, look at the events all you want.
I mean, there are backgrounds, so you want
to,
you know, create an event sample that, you know, doesn't have too much background in it, right? So you have to do some cuts and what have you. Well, once you've done that, you do that, yeah.
I think in H1, Dick analyzed 2,000 or 3,000 events by hand to find the row of the resonance.
Yeah.
Get a room full of people just saying yes, no.
You can fool yourself that way.
I'm sure you can.
You just pick out the events you like and then go off and make an analysis
but
that selects
on
the events you like.
On the other hand, the way we did it was to say, well, can something concoct a model which would predict something in the data that I don't even know if it's in. Rather than saying, well, let's look at the data and say, let's concoct a model. Okay, if you bias yourself, you might find something completely bogus, but then we run a second experiment and maybe LHC to see if it's right.
Any more questions for Jack?
Oh, okay. I have a question which is general, which may not be too relevant, but I'm just thinking, if I didn't know weak physics, and I make this model of, you know, there's a neutron and a proton, and they differ by one MeV, and an electron sits right in that gap, what degree of fine-tuning would you give to that claim?
Well, I didn't have a chance to discuss whether a light MA is natural, right? A small value of MA is natural. That turns out to be a symmetry point of the NMSSM, that if you go to the symmetry point, in fact, the pseudoscalar is massless. It's Goldstone boson, and that symmetry is only broken by the soft supersymmetry breaking at the loop level. And so the loop corrections, you know, give you a light MA with exactly the right properties in a large part of parameter space, it turns out.
Okay, I was just wondering if
your question.
Well, I was wondering if it's, how seriously do we have to take the fine-tuning scale nature just may have chosen FT equals 989, it's a large number. Just happened. I mean, this is
the anthropic
principle sort of argument.
Well, Keith, if you were at his seminar on Monday, well, I can't remember where you were, I mean, he has another perspective on this. He says, okay, well, you know, we have this nice effective theory, and it looks like it's got some problems, okay? But, you know, I've got all these KK towers and God knows what that could, you know, in other words, extra matter can always come in and, you know, that can contribute to controlling the quadratic divergences at some, you know, automatic way, okay? And I don't know whether he really knows what the mass scale of this Higgs boson is. If these KK towers are too high, then of course, you know, you'll still have some fine-tuning issues, but, you know, John would come in and say, well, why not create a Higgsless model, in fact, where you don't have any Higgs at all, and WW unitarity is cured by, you know, W prime and Z prime things. You need to go to extra dimensions, you need to do some warping, and so forth, to get everything to work out with precision electron weak constraints, but that's a whole other class of model, you know. Here, as I said, you know, I'm sticking to really kind of traditional Higgs models.
Okay.
Well, thanks, Jack, for itself. Another question, one more question.
Just you mentioned the baryonic R parity violation. So, other than keeping the proton from decaying too fast, is it still considered a reasonable element by theoretically to have the baryonic R parity violation be present?
Well, the problem that we don't like is, and I didn't have a chance to talk about this, is that you lose the SUSY dark matter explanation if you have R parity violation of either kind, right? Now, it'd be very nice to have a dark matter explanation out of SUSY, but maybe that's an incorrect bias. Maybe there's some other explanation for dark matter, not to mention dark energy. We just haven't envisioned yet.
Okay, well, thank Jack for his energy.